Hello, everybody. I'm an alcoholic. My name's Keith.
Hi, Keith.
And the most important thing that I can share with you is it hadn't been necessary for me to take a drink or do any drugs since May 11th, 1976, and for that I'm especially grateful. Sometimes when asked to participate together on some of this stuff, it's kind of, people are not sure what we're going to do, and sometimes we're not real sure what we're going to do. But anyway, to give you a little update on why and what, you know, the reason we started doing this, there's no experts on any of this stuff, but we came to the program as a family, and we've stayed as a family. The program has put our family back together, a husband, a wife, and a daughter. And in so doing, my father came to the program and sobered up. So we have a whole family of recovery there. Sue and I have been married 40 years, continuously. We were together over 2 years prior to that marriage. So we were in the active disease for 15 years. She was with me for 15 years of my drinking. We have a daughter that's 39 years old. So she was with, 12 and a half, 13 years old when I sobered up. So she was at least 12 years in, over 12 years in active alcoholism. We came to the program through not a treatment center, but a family recovery unit. I was 12-step by an AA member and put in a detox that had family recovery oriented. They had counseling and directional advice for Al-Anon and Alateen, and we have stayed in that path and in those prospective programs for over 26 years. There's never been any time off for good behavior for any one of the three of us. We've never taken any sabbaticals or any vacation. Daily basis. I go to Alcoholics Anonymous daily, and Sue is a daily active member of Al-Anon, and our daughter, who grew up in Alateen, is a basic, then went into Al-Anon, is an active member of Al-Anon today, when we say active member of Al-Anon or AA, means we have home group, we have a sponsor, active involved with a sponsor, and we're working programs together. We work the steps as individuals, individually. We work the steps not with each other, but in our prospective programs. I worked the steps when I came to Alcoholics Anonymous as an alcoholic. Sue worked the steps as a Al-Anon, and our daughter worked the steps with her sponsor as an Alateen. And then that left a family unit, and a real sick one, by the way. And in the first 3 years of my sobriety, I was hardly around the house. I was gone most of that period of time. We were definitely not attached to hip. It took me at least 3 years to get a good enough program to come and be around the home, which gave them time to work on themselves. So once I came and was around the home, I was off working and trying to make enough money to make my financial amends, really, is what I was trying to do. And they let me do that, by the way. They didn't enable me and offer me money. So by the time I was 3 years sober, I was back as an active member in my family, and we had some problems that we had to take care of, and we went to the traditions. Incidentally, the steps, the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous and the 12 steps of Al-Anon are basically the same. They were given to Al-Anon and to Alateen, basically from AA, so it wasn't a complicated situation for us to work the steps. They're basically the same. But when we started practicing the traditions, as a family group, the traditions are for the group, what the steps are for the individual. We had a group. We had three people living in the same household. And therefore, we needed help. We need a set of guidelines. And the basic guideline in the very beginning to live in our house was you had to have a home group, you had to have a sponsor. That were the rules. There were rules. And it was absolute. Now, we come from very, very violent background, very physically violent. A lot of physical violence, a lot of insanity, very active insanity. So therefore, there were some absolutes in the very beginning. And so we adapted, we took the traditions and applied them in our life. And that's what Sue and I'd like to share with you today. The traditions, the Al-Anon traditions are... They came along a little later, and Bill interjected a few things into the Al-Anon traditions that he didn't get into the AA traditions, and he knew they were causing problems in the AA traditions, and therefore he helped Lois and the girls when they were doing the Al-Anon traditions. So there's a little improvement there. If you care to study it, you'll see it. But as our family put that back together, if this is a disease of perception, as you stay sober and progress and use these steps and the traditions, your perception should change. This is a disease that has a solution, and we applied the solution to our lives, and our lives changed and got better. I'm not here to stand and tell you that these things don't work. We're not here to give you a tale of woe or a terrorist, some kind of a thing of a sobriety that's worse than our drunkologue. We applied these things in our life, and we got better. We stayed together, and we worked as a family unit, and we've stayed together as a family unit today even. And so we'd like to share with you some of that. And Sue will start with tradition one.
Hi, I'm Sue. Very grateful member of the Al-Anon family groups, and I haven't stabbed or hit Keith since May the 11th, 1976, and for that he's grateful.
And that didn't mean she hadn't needed to.
Or anybody else. When I got here, my sponsor said for me to hit or stab anybody was no different than an alcoholic taking a drink. And I couldn't do that anymore. And I haven't. People had needed it, but it's not my job. I gave it up. So anyway, like he said, when we decided that we had to have this program, there was no other solutions for us. I came in here very desperate, and I wanted answers. And this program worked for me. And the first sponsor I had was very strong on the traditions, and she said that if we were going to make it in this home together, that we had to apply the traditions in the home. And so I retyped the traditions and stuck them on the refrigerator, and everywhere it said group, Al-Anon family group in there, I put family. And she came over one day and said I had to retype them, that it was not my business to change the steps or the traditions. And that everywhere it said group, I just split it up into grow up, and we definitely needed to grow up in our house. And we needed guidelines to go by, and so those traditions were on our refrigerator for many, many years. And when we'd start to get in an argument, you know, we'd look at each other and one of us would say, what tradition are you breaking? You know, and that stopped all of the arguments. And these are guidelines. In the Al-Anon 12 and 12, it says that traditions are not rules. There are no rules, no must in Al-Anon, except the guidance of the traditions has been described as obedience to the unenforceable. And that's what I like about these. This is a spiritual program. And if I'm going to grow and I'm going to change in this program, then I have to have obedience to the unenforceable, which is my God. In tradition one, our common welfare should come first. Personal progress for the greatest number depends upon unity. And that means that I had to work the steps and get my personal life and my personal program in order for me to be any good in any relationship at all. And I knew nothing about relationships. And the thing that helped me the most was developing a relationship with a sponsor. And the sponsor I had in the very beginning, the sponsor I have now, has not always told me everything I've wanted to hear. And when I would get upset with my sponsor of not co-signing my stuff, I didn't want to divorce her. And every time Keith had said something I didn't want to hear, I always wanted to divorce him. And so I couldn't run anymore. I couldn't. There wasn't any place else for me to go. I'd done all the running before I got here, so I had to work the steps for myself. And then when it came the time to do traditions, it came to the harmony. And if I'm not going to apply my program to myself and carry these traditions into my home, there will not be any harmony. And there won't be any unity in our home, and there hadn't been unity for years. That means that I not only had to learn how to become a wife, but I had to learn how to become a mother, too. And our daughter, being 13 years old, she got to have a say-so in that house. And so by doing that, we had to share our experience, strength, and hope with each other, like call your sponsor. Instead of, we didn't let each other dump on each other anymore. We couldn't take each other's inventories anymore, which was really hard. And by doing that, it's like together we can make it. You know, we can't do, we got to work the steps individually, but without these traditions, we'll never make it. And the neat part about that is in the first step, the first word is we.
And the first step, the same person wrote the traditions and had the most powerful impact on them. They wrote the steps. The first step says, we admitted we were powerless over alcohol and that our lives had become unmanageable. So in the first tradition, our common welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends upon AA unity. I couldn't have AA unity. I couldn't have any kind of relationship with my family if I didn't develop that relationship with a sponsor first and a home group. And I had to have a support for my sobriety at home. There was some absolutes in the very beginning of my sobriety. I didn't have to work a long inventory on it. There's never been any alcohol or drugs in our home since I sobered up, brought in by the non-alcoholics, and it's just not in our home. I'm that type of an alcoholic. They understood that. And why would we want to bring something back into the house that's caused us so much pain for so many years? So the unity started out by coming from the fact that the Al-Anon and the Alateen, there were some, as our daughter grew up, there were some times as she became a teenager that was a little, had to be straightened out a couple of times because she brought some friends over that had some alcohol. But we don't have alcohol in our home, didn't have it since I sobered up, nor do we have any narcotics. And that was part of the unity. The unity was to support sobriety. Tradition 2, for our group purpose, there is but one ultimate authority, a loving God as he may express himself in our group conscience. And that goes along with the second step. That dethroned me. I wasn't God anymore. The ultimate authority meant that we had a program in the house. We're trying to go towards a spiritual path. We usually referred to our sponsors and we respected that. We had to learn to respect that. We didn't compete with anybody else. Early on in the program, we weren't going to compete with anybody else. We were going to compete with any other group. We weren't going to compete with anybody's particular things. We're out of the competing business. We're into recovery. And so we had to have, individual growth. And we had to understand that we got real busy in the program. We had to understand you can't confuse motion with progress. And there was a lot of flopping and going on, but that doesn't necessarily mean that you're going in a spiritual path. We'd already been through all kinds of, we'd been baptized and dipped. My daughter said, Daddy, please don't make me go down there and get in that tub again. You know what I mean? Every time I got guilty, my daughter had to get baptized. You know what I mean? We both looked like prunes, I'm telling you. And so we didn't have any outside affiliation or anything like that. We had a group purpose, and our purpose was trying to live by these steps and these traditions. And it changed our perception. We had a new set of rules. We had a new set of guidelines to live by. I had some absolutes. I went to AA in and out for 4 years before I sobered up. So when I finally sobered up, I didn't need to do a long inventory on things I couldn't do and stay sober. I couldn't hit anybody anymore like her. The violence had to stop. I haven't hit anybody since May 11, 1976. A lot of people have needed it. It's just not my job to do it. And I had to take certain actions to, direct that properly. I haven't cheated on Sue since May 11. We played a lot of sexual games, get-even games, and that had to stop. in order to have family recovery. And I haven't cheated on her, nor has she cheated on me, and that put trust in there. If you want to have a loving God in your life, you need to be trustworthy to God. If you want to trust God and clean house and work with others, you have to be trustworthy. And we had to start in a lot of areas, the sexual areas, the money areas. I had to quit writing checks. I couldn't write any more hot checks. I haven't written any hot checks since May 11th, 76. And part of that is cleaning up the insanity. If I'm going to be in a position to try to trust God, I have to be trustworthy. And those were the things that I had to do in the very beginning. And that tradition of an ultimate authority, I wasn't Mr. Fix-It anymore. Self-appointed.
In the Al-Anon tradition, too, is the same as the AA's, except they added a sentence. Our leaders are but trusted servants. They do not govern. And so that meant, you know, like he pointed out, that we had to work on trust with each other. And if I wanted him to be able to trust him, I had to become trustworthy myself. And that also started out with the relationship with the sponsor, because I couldn't lie to a sponsor. You know, and, you know, it means nobody is the ultimate authority in there. When it came to family decisions, we ended up, I hadn't cooked for years before we got this program, because all of our food ended up on ceilings and walls and everywhere. And so after I got to the program, one of the things that I was directed to do by a sponsor was to fix breakfast on Saturday and Sunday mornings. And what happened, which was God's work and not our plan, was that those turned into family meetings in our home. That each person had the opportunity to share at that breakfast table, and nobody could interrupt. And you couldn't share twice. Once you'd shared, you were done. You couldn't take anybody else's inventory. You just
no rebuttal from me. See, I would always tell you what you were wrong. I always knew what you were supposed to be doing. And they dethroned me. They stole it. That tradition shut me up.
And in this tradition, the three words that are most important in our home with our family, like the first tradition, is call your sponsor. The three words in this tradition that were most important is my sponsor says.
And at the end of tradition two, it says, I listened and thank God I obeyed. I remember one time I was arguing with my daughter about her sex life, and I heard this car coming down the street about 100 miles an hour and slid right up in my driveway, and it was my sponsor. He'd come right out of that truck and right into my front door and come right in there and told me to shut up. And what her sex life was, she was, you know, 19, 20 years old. He said, her sex life is none of your business. And I obeyed him. I never brought it up again. Didn't want to know.
He asked me if I had any problems, what my problems were, his sponsor asked me. And I said, Keith's always kept me pregnant and barefooted in the checkbook, and I'm paying all these bills, and he's not participating. And so his sponsor took a group conscience and asked me what bills I wanted to get rid of, and told Keith he had to start taking care of those, because we all deserved the same freedom, whether it was financially.
My sponsor gave me some of her bills. Can you imagine that? He'd see me pull that money out in the seventh tradition. You know, at the meeting, I'd pull a wad of money out. I wanted to impress them newcomers with how much money I had in sobriety. He did a little inventory on me and decided I need to pay more at the house. Yeah.
But what that did, it took the scorecards away, because we were always playing the games and keeping score of who did this and who did that, and this started taking the scorecards away, you know, and being more honest with each other.
We had to follow by the steps, and we go back to the steps on each one of these things. Tradition 3, the only requirement for AA membership is a desire to stop drinking. And in our house, if you go back to the third step, is we made a decision. And in our house, we made a decision. We made a decision. We didn't. One of the absolutes when I sobered up was, it is absolute God. If you want to debate God, go ahead. I don't want to offend God anymore. I offended him all my life, and I don't want to do it anymore. And so we had a desire for me to stop drinking and stay stopped. It wasn't just, I'd been in and out of AA for 4 years. I'd been in and out. So we had, there's nothing that'll rob a child's belief in God more than daddy going down to church drunk and getting baptized, and everybody in that church house is praying for me to sober up, and I go outside and give me a bottle and stand there to shake hands for the new member drunk. And in the house of God, our daughter didn't even believe in God anymore. So tradition three, the desire for stopped drinking was that we had no other affiliations other than our perspective program. We put 110% into our perspective program. We didn't deviate at all. Now, I know a lot of people may not be able to do that, but by the same token, it's just like the Alateens. I hear people say, we don't have any Alateen over there where I live. Well, why don't you start one? That's what we did. We supported those things. We wanted this stuff. We had a definite desire to have sobriety in our home, and that was by the Al-Anon and the Alateen, and certainly by me. So we didn't have any problems with that. We recognized that organized religion was a delusion for us because we tried it over and over and over again, and it didn't work for us. And we depended upon the legacy of the program. The program offered us sobriety and change. It offered sanity for the Al-Anon and the Alateen and change in their life, and so we gave it 110%.
The Al-Anon tradition is different. The relatives of alcoholics, when gathered together for mutual aid, may call themselves an Al-Anon family group, provided that as a group they have no other affiliation. The only requirement for membership is there be a problem of alcoholism and a relative or friend. And one of the things in the Al-Anon 12 and 12 that this tradition talks about is devotion. And I definitely devoted myself to Keith and his active disease when he was out there doing his thing. And if I want recovery in my home, I have to be an example. You know, I can't complain that he's doing this or he's doing that if I'm not being an example. My sponsor told me, and still tells me today, the woman sets the pace in the home. And I didn't want that responsibility, and she said, tough. Yeah, because that's the way it works. That's the way it's worked forever. It's not a tradition. It's a human pattern. What do you call it? I don't remember. Well, it is a tradition in family units throughout the years, is that the man always does the living, gets a paycheck, you know, and is responsible for that, and the woman always took care of the home. And so,
in regards to working with other alcoholics, one of the things I used to, when I was drinking, I brought drunks home all the time. And part of my amends and part of this tradition was that I didn't bring any drunks home and put them up at my house to sober up. I'd take them to a 12-step house or to a motel. There'd been enough drunk men at my house, and our house was always open for the Al-Anons to come there, for women from battered families would come there. There was a lot of women and children that were able to come to our house and spend the night because the drunk father was tearing the place up. And part of my spiritual growth was to treat those ladies as ladies, not as somebody I met at a bar. And so when those Al-Anons would come over there, they were getting away from a guy like I used to be. So I would try to treat them decent, try to help them, and sometimes fix their cars. They were running around with cars with fenders flopping and wheels falling off with six kids in the car because the drunks used all the money. And I would try to help, you know, the families of and be an example. And that was a good example for our daughter. She saw the change in me.
Keith had started sponsoring people before I did. And I got very jealous of that. And I got very upset with the fact that there was alcoholics in our home all the time. You know, and there was no more, it seemed like there was no more privacy. And I had a long timer in my life by the name of Elsa Chamberlain that I thought was the president of Al-Anon. And so I called her to report Keith to her. And I said, our home is not an Al-Anon club. And she said, good, Keith's working with a lot of sober drunks, huh? And I said, yeah, he is. They're over here all the time. And she said, well, I suggest if you don't want to be resentful about that, you better start sponsoring Al-Anons and better start bringing them into your home and have the same deal. And so we started both getting into sponsorship. Simone started sponsoring young Alateens, and there were Alateens in our home all the time. You know, and they were welcome there if they couldn't.
We had a lot of
home.
Kids in a, over at our house all the time. She would bring kids over there, and they could see a sober home, and they could see a change, and they could see that I was sober. They could see us doing things together, and it was an attraction as a family. And my kid didn't dodge and duck. Today, whenever I sponsor somebody that has kids, I like to go over to their house and watch the kids when Dad walks around in there. You can tell how good a program he has. If all the kids are still ducking and dodging, why then all his spirituality in the meeting is probably usually a bunch of crap, you know.
And when Simone got her first car, one of the conditions on that car is that she had to haul Alateens to meetings that couldn't drive. And so that was one of the conditions on our car. Everything we have done in our life since May 11th, 1976 has been focused on this program and what is good for us because of this program's in our life. We do not live our life and try to fit AA and Al-Anon into it. We live AA and Al-Anon, and we fit our life into it because it is our life.
One of the things, don't get the idea that we were just sat around an AA meeting or an Al-Anon meeting all the time. I worked and she worked, and our daughter went to work and finished school. Our daughter went to school and then went to college and pursued a degree, which she finally got in marketing. And so we were living lives, and taking care of business. We got out of our old neighborhood. One of the things that was real important was to get out of our old drunken house and the drunken behavior in our house. Our house was terrible. It was painted four different colors. When I sobered up, and one of the important things to do, I've got the house painted. I got all the old antiques out of the front yard and got the motorcycle pulled out of the front of the house, you know. Got some doors on the place, got some windows in the place. Sobered up that house, and
I had to get curtains, draw the curtains back. I remember my sponsor came over one day, and I'd started wallpapering. I didn't spackle or nothing of that. I just got wallpaper and started papering up the holes, and that's what I did the first year of the program. And
You can't do that if you're sitting around with a bunch of drama queens. You can't get anything done. The drama queens' business was over. This is not any more big deals and flopping around on the floor and yelling, screaming, or I'm going to get drunk if you do that. You know, there was no more threats. I couldn't say, if you do that, I'm going to get drunk. It was about, you know, we got to change. We got to change here, or else it's just going to go back worse than it was. So we moved on to tradition four. Each group should be autonomous except in matters affecting other groups or AA as a whole. And one of the most important things with that tradition applies as far as we used and how we applied it is in step four, it says you make a fearless and thorough moral inventory. And so by making a moral inventory on the individual, we had to make a moral inventory of the way we lived and the way we were living in that house. And we had to take the fear out of that house. And the way that affected us, I'll tell you something that happened when we started living that way. We started getting a lot of criticism from people in Alcoholics Anonymous and in Al-Anon. If you change and improve yourself and you're doing good drastically, there's a certain facet of Alcoholics Anonymous that will scandalize that will talk bad about you. Oh, they think they're special or something. I am special. I came in here crazy, and I'm trying to get spiritual. And I have a set of rules that I can follow, and if I obey them, I will change. And so we had to get out of the business of trying to outperform, outthink, or outmaneuver anybody. We had to do this for ourselves, and we were doing it for our family. I wasn't going to sit around AA and save a seat for my daughter. I saw too much pain for that. Too many people sit around and say, well, I'll just save a seat for my kid. If that's what you want to do, that's fine. We started sponsoring Alateens. We were very involved in Alateens, and I'm very grateful for that, because when my daughter came to the fork in the road to make a decision whether she wanted to be an alcoholic or addict or just be an Al-Anon, she had the tools to make the proper decision. By the same token, when it came time for her to fall in love with a man, she was spiritually fit to attract a spiritually fit man and a healthy man who she's married to today. So there was things that I knew that if I did properly, my child wouldn't have to go through the things that I did or her mother did.
In this tradition, one of the slogans in our home that we used all the time is that your actions speak so loud I can't hear a word you say. And when you start saying that to each other in the home, you know, it makes you look at yourself. You know, when my daughter would say that to me, it made me look at myself and say, what kind of an example am I being? You know, and, you know, in Alcoholics Anonymous, they say, take your eyes off yourself and put them on others. And Al-Anon's just backwards of that. It says take the eyes off of others and put them on ourselves, because we've been obsessed with an alcoholic for years. And so I had to put my eyes back on myself. You know, my sponsor would say, you know, when you're going like this, you know, one finger's going out and three are coming back, so take a clue. And she said I had to take the cotton out of my ears and put it in my mouth, because listening was part of communication.
As we change, why, as one of the traditions previously stated, the good is the enemy of the best, and we had to have sobriety as the number one objective in our home, because we knew if there wasn't sobriety, there wasn't going to be sanity or serenity. And therefore, they have always supported my sobriety. There's never been anything I've done in Alcoholics Anonymous with members of Alcoholics Anonymous that they've resented. They've never asked me to stay home and do anything different. However, by the same token, I was able to be there on the sidelines when my daughter was a cheerleader. I was able to be there when my wife was in her sorority. She got to be the the girl of the year thing. I was there to escort her as her husband. We still were able to do things that were part of our life and part of our living experiences. And my biggest fear was I'd go to my meeting and I always criticized people that got up in the middle of the meeting and left, where they got to go, you know. And then I had to be over beside on the sidelines at the football game when my daughter was at halftime. And so I talked to my sponsor, I had my sponsor's support, and I actually ran the course before my meeting night during the day, so I'd know how long it'd take me to get from that meeting over to that sideline and then back. And I was able to be there on that sideline when my daughter came down through there as a cheerleader. And the work she'd done that the Alateens had given her the year before, she tried out for cheerleading and she lost. And Sue and I both told her, because the disease said, you know, why are you going to do that again your senior year and lose, because it's a negative thing. And she did it again and didn't even tell us, and she won. She became a cheerleader on her own, and we asked her, why'd you go through that again? Weren't you afraid of losing? She said, no, it didn't mean the same.
She said, my motives are different this time.
It didn't make any difference if I did it for me. Last year, I did it for you guys. See?
At 17 years old, she knew what a motive was.
Right. Because things were changing in our home, see? Tradition 5, each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the alcoholic who still suffers. And that was one thing that we were supporting, was sobriety in our home. We would go to meetings. We went to meetings where there was, family recovery. We have always stayed in family recovery because we were a family. And we went to meetings where there was other children. We came in the same car. We sat together. I'll never forget one time I came and shared at a meeting when I was brand new. And we all wondered who had the the best story or something.
Who talked the best?
Yeah. We always question each other who talked the best, who did what. And later somebody said the message was that you and your wife and daughter came in the same car, sat together, got up there and did your thing, and then sat down together and got in the same car and went home. And by admitting to God and another human being the exact nature of our wrongs and what we were doing and what was going on in our life, we didn't have any games. There were no games. We weren't pulling stuff out of a hat that we hadn't already gone through. We weren't changing our stories. We would go and share as a family, and we started doing that in Al-Anon way before I was ever asked to talk in Alcoholics Anonymous. But I would share the message of recovery. And
the fifth tradition in Al-Anon is a lot different. It says, each Al-Anon family group has but one purpose, to help families of alcoholics. We do this by practicing the 12 steps of AA ourselves, by encouraging and understanding our alcoholic relatives, and by welcoming and giving comfort to families of alcoholics. This is my favorite tradition. There's a lot of people in Al-Anon that say, You can't use the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous in an Al-Anon meeting, and they are right. But I believe that I don't want to be closed-minded because our Al-Anon literature says learn everything you can about the disease of alcoholism, and I don't know a better place to learn about alcoholism than in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous.
Our whole family had one text. We studied the big book. We didn't sit down and bang on it at the kitchen table. We did it with our group and with our sponsor and with our newcomers, and then we had a common vocabulary. We talked the same language when we were communicating with each other. And my family always supported sobriety. They didn't do things nor try to get other people, other alcoholics. They didn't try to pull other alcoholics who were friends of mine off into things that would have got them drunk. We always did things that were conducive to sobriety.
One of the things that I think is most important for newcomers to learn, and I had a hard time with it, is why I feel this way, is that I didn't understand that the first drink got him drunk until I read the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. I thought that was the 8th or 9th or 10th drink that got him drunk. I didn't know that the first drink set up that phenomenon of craving. And that's what the non-alcoholic needs to understand, is that I can't just go to a restaurant with my husband and have a cocktail. It's like we heard a speaker the other night said, you know, his sponsor asked him, you know, what's wrong with you? You know, do you want a drink? And he said, no, I don't want a drink. I want to drink. And that's what the non-alcoholic doesn't understand. A drink will not fix it for an alcoholic.
When we went to meetings and the old-timers were in there talking, said, if you want what we have, let me tell you, if you don't want what they have, don't worry, you'll never get it. If you don't like what the old-timers are saying, don't worry, you'll never be one. And we wanted to be one. We wanted to be old-timers in this program. We wanted this thing with all our life and all our soul. We wanted it, all three of us. This is somewhat unique. Not all families have that, but it's possible because we did it. And coming from where we came from, why then we had to start at the very basic beginning. I believe that our willingness to do what we had to do in this program is directly proportional to the pain that we went through to get here.
Okay, tradition 6 says our Al-Anon family groups ought never to endorse, finance, or lend their name to outside enterprises, lease problems of money, property, and prestige divert us from our primary spiritual aim. Although a separate entity, we should always cooperate with Alcoholics Anonymous. Now, this was hard because when we got to this program, Keith owed a lot of money. And I was told to mind my own business, that those were his amends and not mine. And so I did not want to divert him from his primary spiritual aim, so I let him make his own financial amends all by himself. I didn't chip in and do all that kind of stuff for him. I kept current, and I was responsible on what was required of me for us to get along in our own family life and our family responsibilities. And I allowed him to take care of all of his financial amends himself because it was his drinking and his actions while he was drinking, his drunken behavior, that got him those problems. Now, if I'm going to stay out of his inventory and stay out of his program, then I've got to stay out of all of it, not just a little bit, but all of it. He didn't really like that in the very beginning, but I told him, I can't work your program for you. Outside enterprises... like he said earlier, religion didn't fix it for us. We tried that, and a sober AA priest told me one time, I'll never forget it. He said, religion cannot fix sick people. He said, once you get a program going, the 12 steps will fix sick people, and religion can enhance your spirituality, but religion cannot fix you. And I had that experience that I knew that was true for us. It had never helped us. And, you know, what I found out is that religion is for people who are afraid to go to hell, and Al-Anon and AA is for people that have already been there.
We had a primary spiritual aim, and that was for family recovery. And the thing that we noticed by the time we had worked the traditions to this point was that there was never one time when all three of us were out of God consciousness. There was always one of us in God consciousness. That kept the direct connection all the time. Even if somebody was in a bad place, well, there was always a time when one of us was in God conscious. Usually the youngster, our daughter, she didn't have as many roadblocks with her higher power as we did, or as we had influence through the futile attempts to try to find a God through many different ways. Simone was very simple. The thing that influenced all that was, as I stayed sober and as I made my financial amends, as we went to meetings with people and what have you, why money, property, and prestige started coming in. Our daughter by that time was in high school and she wanted things. I was making my financial amends. We got a period of time we went to meetings where there was a lot of wealthy people, and we were not in that position at that time at all. And we got to feeling sorry for ourselves. We were hanging around people that had a lot of money, that came to AA with a lot of money. We set up a lot of competition and comparing ourselves with other people. And it caused us a lot of pain as a family, because some families had more. And here we're working like crazy to keep a program and try to have a spiritual goal. And so we had to get out of the competing business. We had to get back to basics and sit down at our kitchen table and have those meetings and look back from where we came. Like the big book said, that's where we refer to the big book, is that our past is our greatest asset. And we'd look where we came from.
And acceptance is the answer to all our problems.
No matter how far down the scale you've gone, why, you can still come back up. And we had never, ever faced with a situation in sobriety that we couldn't sit down and see where we hadn't been in a worse situation. Also, in this tradition, six ties in with your step six, which is your character defects. And during that period of time of recovery, way back then, Sue and I started going into prisons a lot and jail panels, and we saw a lot of the consequences of people's insanity and their character defects. And it helped us get back to basics by seeing people in jails and doing time for things. Even in sobriety, some of them did that, and they were paying the consequences of actions that they'd taken before and after the sobriety. And we had to, take a look at that and see. And there was no way that we could find ourselves in a competitive situation lie to ourselves about our character defects. Our character defects will cause a lot of problem, even sobriety. And tradition six deals with those character defects just like step six does. And it brings those character defects to play back into the home. And
what I found out is that the women's prison that I go to, there's a lot of women in there exactly like me. And I just didn't get caught. But for the grace of God, we're both still alive.
I found a lot of guys in prison, particularly around California, who had some amount of sobriety and then ended up doing something crazy or taking some chances in sobriety, or thought they could get away with something, or gambling, or doing some of their old deals, and ended up back in prison sober. And I saw a lot of opportunities to make the same mistakes. So tradition seven, every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. And that was one of the things where we had to start being self-supporting at home. And not only did I have a lot of financial amends to make, but I still had to take care of my home, still had a responsibility to my family. And like I said, I didn't want to worked three or four jobs, so I couldn't go to any AA meetings. I had to, take care of business and try to, we had to sit down and discuss how a budget and work on our finances. I had a lot of, financial amends to make. I had a lot of the IRS problems and what have you, and we got us a financial man to take care of us and help us financially. And this was part of the tradition seven, was to take care of these things. And there was some a lot of humility and a lot of honesty came out in that tradition around the house. Big Daddy wasn't Big Daddy anymore. And I couldn't always pull out the money out of my pocket in sobriety that I would have liked to have. But I wasn't going to be manipulated by guilt either. I had a lot of guilt, and I wasn't going to be manipulated by guilt. And this tradition helped me. And I didn't have to beg anybody. I didn't have to go to my parents anymore. If we didn't have it, we didn't have it. If we had it, then we all shared it.
In this tradition, the neat thing about detox where Keith went is that they taught the guys in there how to do laundry. And so when Keith got home, he's kept doing his own laundry, you know. This last February, I retired, and he still does his own laundry, but when it comes out of the dryer, I always try to fold it for him and put it up for him. And that's my contribution in that. On the seventh tradition, we clean up after ourselves if we make a mess.
I do dishes too, but not windows.
And when people come over to our house and they want coffee, you know, they pour themselves a cup of coffee, they're welcome to it, you know, and then they wash out their cup and put it up when they're done. If you're a smoker and you come to our house, you're welcome to smoke, but when you're done before you leave, you know, empty your ashtray and wipe out the ashtray. One of the guys Keith sponsored one time, we'd tell him that, and he would never do that. So Simone and I saved up all of his cigarette butts in a big envelope, and we mailed them to him and said, here's your seventh tradition. And
mostly what we experienced by the time we were practicing the seventh tradition in our home was collective poverty. Because I had some tremendous financial amends. I bought a house. The house we were living at when I sobered up in, I bought it for less than $20,000, and I owed $120 on it when I sobered up. The house payment was like $165 a month, and if Sue hadn't had a job, it wouldn't have been made, you know, and I hadn't paid taxes on it in a long time, and it was really a mess, and I had to fix it up, and I had to change there, and I had to ask for help. Part of that was I had to ask for help. I didn't know how to do all those things, and I would say, you know, I don't know how to do this. I'd start painting one end of the house, and by the time I got the other, I'd change my mind two or three times, and the house was about three or four different colors.
Oh, my gosh, and he'd have sober alkies come over and help him try to paint it after he got an AA, and one side would be one color for two or three months, and then they'd come back, and the paint would be dried out.
We got so good at painting, we did it every weekend. The worst part was when I put a skylight in.
Oh, God. And it was in the rainy season?
In the rainy season. They're holding the roof of the house for about 6 months.
And we'd sit and watch TV with umbrellas. You know, and this is the part where this program helps me so much, because I didn't rant and rave about all that stuff anymore. I could see that he was trying, and we was trying to improve ourselves. And it was the acceptance, and we called the contractor, and he came and put plastic over it. And it just wasn't a big deal because we're trying.
She went over to somebody's house that had a lot of money, and they had skylights in it. She come home and said, I'd like to have a skylight. I got some sober alcoholics that got their contractor's license. Next thing you know, we got a hole in the roof.
The neat part was that he got his financial amends taken care of by himself. However, he was changing professions where it was legal now to make money. And he wasn't making as much money as he did when he was making illegal money. And he had to ask me for help with some of the finances around the house instead of me paying just certain bills and him paying certain bills. He said, babe, I can't do this anymore and stay sober. And he said, I'm going to have to ask you to help me pick up more of this. And I said, okay, fine. You know, and I'd gone up in his office that Saturday morning, and I was going to go to World Service, and I'd gone up there to tell him I was leaving goodbye and kiss him goodbye and that I loved him, and thank him for his sobriety, because there isn't one day in our house that I don't tell Keith at least once during the day, thank you for another day of sobriety in our home. And so I went up there, and he was talking to me about these bills, and he said, can you handle some of this? And I said, yeah, I can help out on some of this, because I knew that he had gotten all that other financial amends made. And now we're a team, because we went through the big surrender of the IRS and all that kind of stuff, and now it's time to be a team in the financial area. That was the last area that we came together in. And so we sat there, and
sex was the last area we came. We're still coming together in that area. But I don't have to leave money on the dresser no more.
And I ain't just a giver either. So anyway, he gave me about $1,200 in bills that morning, and I got up and I said, okay, bye, I'm going to World Service. And he goes, wait, what did you come in here for? I said, I came in here to kiss you goodbye and tell you I love you. And he said, well, and I said, I don't feel that way anymore, you know? And
Tradition 8 says Alcoholics Anonymous should remain forever non-professional, but our service centers may employ special workers. And part of that, our family was working together, and we were kind of unique because we had AA, Al-Anon, and Alateen under the same roof. We had a lot of opportunities to go into the field, and our sponsors directed us not to do that, to stay as a family. And we could have supplemented our income on some of those occasions. At one time, there was 40 treatment centers within 15 minutes of our home where we lived. And we just stayed in our prospective programs and worked with newcomers. There was a lot of opportunities there to do different things, but one of the things that, as she said, the money was always tempting, but I was always a feast or famine type of guy. Whenever I did my inventory, I had to recognize that I was a gambler because everything I would get drunk and lay everything I had on the line. There was always a feast or famine in my home, and I'll never forget after I was sober a while and we were practicing these traditions in our life. I'd look at my wife and daughter and there wasn't that constant fear that daddy's going to bring another deal home that's going to cause us to move or cause us to give up something. And so I was just doing Alcoholics Anonymous. I was just an alcoholic. One of the things they used to say to me all the time when I'd come home and, well, let's do this and, well, let's do that. And so-and-so is doing this and so-and-so is doing that. And my daughter and wife would say to me, why don't you just be an alcoholic? Just be an alcoholic. See? And it took me a number of years of sobriety to just be an alcoholic, I guarantee you. And I just had to have a lot of good ideas. I was torturing myself with good ideas is what I was doing.
We're non-professional, that's for sure. But it was like we had our experience, strength, and hope to share with other people, and that's all we have. And the same way in the home, you know. When Simone asked us question, how do I do this? What should I do about that? You know, what I had to realize about being a parent is that I'm just a babysitter for my daughter because God has no grandkids. She's really God's kids, and God's just put me in charge and Keith in charge for X amount of time. And to teach her principles, and there's not a better way to teach someone a child principles in their life than to take them to the program of Alateen. And so that's the way we worked it in our home. And a lot of times when Keith and I didn't have the answer of what she should do or decisions she should make, which weren't a great effect on the family, that she needed to work out personally for herself, you know, then she'd talk to her sponsor, and we would direct her toward her sponsor.
Tradition 8 is just like Step 8. It's part of your amends. And whenever you look at your amends list and then you come over and roll that over in Tradition 8, we have service centers where we can, volunteer our help. There's some things that you can do. Freely we receive, freely we give. And by the same token, the speaking thing, we were asked to speak a lot. We've been speaking at conventions for over 20 years. We started out with our daughter and with us. We would have AA, Al-Anon, and Alateen. And there were a number of examples that had gone before us. However, several of those examples all ended up in AA. And because they got into theatrical stuff and they got into trying to outperform everybody, they wanted to pop a bunch of stupid jokes and they wanted to be entertainers and they wanted to people-please people into what they were doing or what they were supposed to do. They wanted the bigger applause. They wanted to compete with the other speakers. And one of the things that we had to use that tradition was that we were not going around talking and using the podium to take each other's inventory, nor were we creating situations that would require us to increase our 8-step list. One of the most important things about recovery is that my 8-step list is supposed to get smaller, not larger, as I stay sober. And I could see that in my sobriety, and I could see that in my how I applied that tradition.
And this tradition also taught Keith and I, because we had taken our own personal inventories, and as we grew together in the program, we realized that through difficulties that we had at home, that there's some things that I can do that Keith can't do, and there's some things that Keith can do that I can't do. It's like I can drive a car and it goes. And that's what a car is for. If it has mechanical problems, it needs tires or anything like that, I don't pay attention to that unless it dies, and then I get upset. And I don't know what to do to make a car run. Keith knows about that kind of stuff.
Part of the thing when I made my 8-step list, and by the time I got to the 8th tradition, was that my daughter pushed a lot of guilt buttons. She knew how to push the guilt buttons. And her and Mom, I mean, that's two women in the house, and they double-teaming me. And as I took care of my amends and did this stuff, well, then I didn't have to react to those guilt buttons anymore. It just don't work anymore. We're not going to play that game. Jig's up, game's over. It's done deal. I've made my amends, and it's taken care of. So we go on to the Tradition 9, which is AA as such ought never be organized, but we may create service boards or committees directly responsible for those they serve. And that's part of my amends. We all got involved in committees and what have you, activities of our prospective groups. As a family, we would get involved in committees. Dad would in AA, Mom in Al-Anon, and a kid in Alateen. And we got involved in those things, and we respected each other's commitment. If you have to go do something over there, help set up, and you have to leave a little early, we respected that. And we didn't try to organize our house accordingly. In other words, we didn't say, you have to wash the dishes before you can go do your Alateen commitment. Her Alateen commitment came before the dishes, and we'd all chip in and help her do the dishes. Because we used to have a big thing about we eat and dirty the dishes and the kid cleans them, you know, before you can go to bed or anywhere else, you know. And we had to back off of those kind of things. And our sponsors helped us a lot with that. Our sponsors would, help us organize our own things. We set up little committees to help each other. Like Sue said, she helps me with my clothes now, some things like that. I help her make the bed. I do things around the house. And I've always tried to do that as part of my amends. As well as for my daughter, I was able to make things for her that she needed for her school. And when she got a driver's license, the car, I kept her car running. And I didn't threaten to take it away. I grew up in an alcoholic home, and I always had that thing, here, this is for you. Well, I don't like how you did that or what you did, so I'm going to take it back. And so part of that tradition was that we're going to do something. We're going to stick to it.
Our groups as such are never organized. We may create service boards or committees directly responsible to those they serve. The only way I can work this tradition in my life is by four principles that I was told in the very beginning that I needed to work on. And it works on the steps, and it works on the traditions, and it makes my life more spiritual. Consistency. I had to start going to certain meetings, which I told my sponsor what meetings I'd go to, and I had to show up there because I was being accountable. By the same token that if I went to an Al-Anon function, I had to tell Keith what time I was coming home because that was consideration. Because I'd never tell him anything. He could guess at it because I had to guess at it. And when I started setting that kind of example, he started telling me those kind of things. And so we're accountable today. And by being accountable, it's given us more freedom in our relationship. And it causes less problems. The second thing is perseverance. There wasn't one place that Keith ever went when he ran away from home that I couldn't find him. And I could pursue that alcoholic no matter where he went. I do the same thing with this program. If I want it, I go more, and I pursue it. I want it all. I don't want to leave anything out of my program. I've got to be contributing. You know, contribution is the third part of that. I've got to be contributing something, not just in my meetings, because my sponsor told me in the beginning, we don't care if you're wonderful for an hour and a half in this meeting. If you're not taking this program home, you don't have one. And so I had to make contributions at home, and I had to ask people if they could help me at home, like Simone, instead of telling her. And then by doing that, those first three things, I had to make a spiritual commitment. And I had to get those things in order before I could make a spiritual commitment. Because I knew there was a God, but he failed me many times. And so all of these three things first led me to the spiritual commitment that I have with my God. And when I got in touch with my God, all of the little petty things started being lesser of a problem to me.
One of the things was, in this ninth tradition, was I was a chronic backslider or slipper for 4 years prior. I had gone in and out of AA. Nobody believed I was going to stay sober. And so I had to do things, get involved in service. Like I said, I got involved in H&I when I was 6 months sober. I lied and said I had a year so I could go into a jail, and I've been going in on that lie ever since. If that upsets you, well, I'm sorry. But I'm the only guy I've seen in a jail meeting that's still sober and on the outside, so it worked for me. And
if I'm going to have expectations of a sponsor and I want a sponsor to be working in my life, I got to be committed as a sponsor.
I got involved in convention work. I was the chairman of the Southern California Convention. I had 9,000 people at that convention that year. And Sue and Simone were the Al-Anon chairman and chairman, Alateen chairman. We worked together. And by me making those commitments, then my family believed I'd made a commitment to stay sober. My actions were so strong by me taking commitments that I never did in the 4 years that I was drunk and in and out of AA. So we're going to Tradition 10, Alcoholics Anonymous has no opinion on outside issues, hence an AA name ought never be brought into public controversy. And the first thing we did right there was we didn't take each other's sponsors' inventory. And another thing we did was that every time she changed sponsor did not necessarily mean that I needed to. And every time the kid changed sponsor, it didn't mean that we needed to. We could allow other people their opinion on what was going on and for the betterment. We never did change sponsors, but what we didn't benefit from it. And we've had to change sponsors on a number of occasions because our sponsors started going in different directions. And sponsorship in our home was a tool, and we used that tool just like the big book and just like the steps. And
every time I've changed sponsors, I've gotten a sponsor with more time, with more experience.
We didn't have time for outside issues. We were trying to recovery, and if people wanted to get hung up on outside issues, why, we just blew right on by them. We really did, because we were coming from so far back, we didn't have time to debate it. We were going to sit around and debate it. We had to take action, and the 10th tradition gets out all that gossip. One of the things about, I sobered up with a family, a wife that was in Al-Anon who was sober, watching me drink and do things, a kid that was 12, 13 years old, sober, watching me do things. And so I didn't have a lot of lies that I could stand up here and talk to you about that they wouldn't pull my covers on. And I'll tell you something else, when I was sharing, and my wife and daughter were sitting in the same room, they would correct me. So a lot of stuff I thought I did, I didn't really do. And boy, was I glad. I was glad. I wanted to take them along with me when I was going to go tell my story, because a lot was being revealed to me that I didn't have to carry the big load on. But by the same token, what I was really obvious. And the good part about the 10th tradition about outside issues is that there's no gossip. We didn't have to gossip about other people. It's easy to get caught up in that, particularly if you're a family. You go to a meeting and you come home and then you bring home from two or three meetings and sit down and start taking everybody else's inventory. That didn't work at our house. That did not work at our house. We didn't have time for that. It makes you crazy. So we didn't have any. I would do that. I'm an alcoholic. I want to come home, take everybody's inventory, and the Al-Anon and the Alateen tell me, shut up. They didn't want to hear it. They released my ass, I'll tell you. I don't want to hear that. And, you know, I would sponsor a guy, and he'd be telling me about his wife, and the next time I'd see her, I'd want to slap her because he didn't do nothing but talk bad about her, you know. I had to recognize that was just his opinion about her. And that works in reverse, too. Whenever I'd see her sponsor, I'd dodge a little bit because I think maybe she ought to hit me for what all she said, you know. And so the most important thing about that 10th tradition is just like Rule 62, it's like live and let live. Come on, we need to take care of our own house. We don't have time for all that other stuff. We did that stuff when I was drinking. We would take all that time wasted on comparing and competing and judging and what have you. By the same token, Tradition 10 gave us the freedom to get away from some people in the program that were leading us astray. Whenever I hold hands or whenever we say that closing prayer as our family, and even today, all these years, when I hold that hands and it says, lead us not into temptation, that applies to people in Alcoholics Anonymous. And I'm not going to follow somebody, even a sponsor, into temptation that I can't do. I'm not going to be led there, and I'm grateful that my family meant enough to me that I had the courage to walk away from some people in Alcoholics Anonymous that can do things I can't do and walk away from them so that I wasn't led into temptation that would have got me drunk. And that tradition is very strong in that particular way. And I had family support for that. There was no more room for infidelity. There was no more room for those kind of things. And it was very important, and that tradition brought that out. Tradition 11.
No, I haven't done 10.
Okay, do 10. I thought I covered it for you.
Well, you tried to.
See, just, they won't let me get away with nothing.
Just like my sponsor told me to tell Keith when he was new in the program, when he'd say something and he had the opposite opinion of mine, she'd say, just look at him and say, you could be right. Because she'd say, agreed with thy adversaries quickly and let them be on their way. And I'd go, but he's never been right, ever. And she said, but he thinks he is. And a
couple of times I was.
Well, a couple of times I wasn't. Simone started saying to me, she goes, you're right, Mom, you're right first. Oh, God, that used to make me crazy.
First time I was right, it was a mistake.
So I had to start saying, you could be right. You know, there's different times today I still do that. But today I'm not afraid to say, in the very beginning, because of all the violence that had gone on in our life, I was afraid to have an opinion of my own a lot of times, unless I was in my tennis shoes, and because I'd have to run. And but I was always in Keith's face trying to make him think like I thought. And so I can't do that anymore. He has that kind of stuff. And like he said, you know, this takes a care of gossip. I had a friend in Al-Anon that I just had to tell her one time, you know, I can't talk to you anymore because you talk about everybody but yourself, you know, even if it's in loving concern. You know, and she used to call me all the time and tell me every time somebody in AA or Al-Anon had died, if she heard it before me. And I told her one time, I said, when you die, I want you to be the only one to call me. And after 2 years of her and I not having a friendship, today we have a very good friendship. We have
Al-Anon's love to be the bearer of bad news, too.
Yeah.
Man, and, you had to stop that. You know, wait a minute, let me hear it from somebody else.
I had to practice that principle when we had a year and a half in the program. I'd wrecked Keith's AA car, and he was up working in Canada, and he invited me to come up there to a convention, and I went up there, and I couldn't. My sponsor made me promise I wouldn't tell him that I'd wrecked his car until after he got home to not ruin the weekend. That was the hardest thing I'd ever had to do in this program up to that point. And so when we got up there, the couple that was Keith was hanging out with, his wife was in Al-Anon, and I told her, and she said, don't worry about it. By the time the weekend's over, you know, Keith's going to be okay with that, and you'll be able to share that with him. That I said, okay. So she obviously told her husband, sober alcoholic, that had quite a few years in AA. And he started talking to Keith about material things are only extensions of our egos. And so by the time he got through with him that weekend, then I was able to tell him about the car when we got home.
Well, my ego extension had a hell of a dent in it.
Yeah, and that's exactly the way I said it, too, you know. And so it's those kind of situations that AA and Al-Anon has helped us through. If I shared it properly with the proper person first, the Al-Anon, my side of the program, AA and Al-Anon couples have helped us walk through difficulties like that, where it hasn't been that big of a deal.
That's the main thing. You got to be able to, you know, keep it light.
Because that would have definitely been public controversy had I not shared it with AA people and Ed had worked on him first.
Our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. There was a period of time we were doing so good, I wanted the young guys that I sponsored to date my daughter. we had all the young AA guys over at my house doing prayer and meditation. And any time my daughter went on a date, well, she had to date an AA guy. You know, and they were scared to death if they offended her, well, I was going to thump their melon, you know, or something. Nobody could have any fun at all, you know. It was just, our promotion was so attractive that nobody wanted it, I'll tell you.
But this is a tradition that brings a humility in our life. It gives security to the insecure, and it gives humility to the secure. Because we can't take credit for anything, no matter what anybody does in this program. You know, God uses people to help other people, and that's what He does all the time. Like you get a phone call from a newcomer, and you're sitting there and you're talking on the phone to her, and I always say to God, God, please give me the words that this newcomer and I need to hear. And, you know, before she hangs up, she always, you know, I'm giving her stuff and sharing the experience with her, and I'll hear myself say something and I'll think, Jesus, that's so good, I got to use that myself. And I know that it's not me talking, that it's God using me as an instrument to help somebody else.
But we have to be careful and don't confuse God's work with God's will. And that's what we were doing. We got so involved in doing God's work that we thought we were doing God's will. And this Tradition 11, along with Step 11, is to help us, for us to be in line with God's will. And when there's three people involved, you have family recovery, you have three relationships, then I have to exercise some self-restraint, because I know what's best for everybody, and I know what we should read when we meditate and pray. And
that's
boy,
like
the Alateen really straightened me out on that. She wouldn't do what I thought was best for her at all.
When Keith and I first started praying on our knees together by the bed, we'd be on his side of the bed. And so one night I said, why do we always do this on your side of the bed? And he said, because I'm the man in the house. And I said, no, that's not good enough. So we got down at the foot of the bed, neutral territory, and we started saying our prayers together in neutral
territory. That's basically what we had to do in a lot of areas in this tradition taught us. In order to be in line with God's will, we had to be in neutral territory.
Mm-hmm.
And we had to recognize that we were doing a lot of actions, but our heart wasn't in it. We were doing it because we thought we'd get approval. We thought we would get asked to speak. We thought we was going to get patted on the head. And by then, we were going around talking a lot with other groups of people. And we were the cute little AA and Al-Anon couple and family, you know. And people were holding us up as, you know, look how good they're doing, you know, and all that heady wine crap. And we were saying things that we didn't mean. We were saying we were doing things that we weren't doing. And as an alcoholic, I can assure you I've had a series of surrenders throughout my sobriety. I'm sober over 26 years. I had some big surrenders between 2 and 3. I had big surrenders between 6 and 10. I had huge surrenders at 14, 15 years of sobriety. I had some big surrenders at 20 years of sobriety. I've had some huge surrenders. I mean, surrenders that changed our whole family's outlook and could have caused me to lose my sobriety. And those were things that were going on, and we had to be able to share those things. We could not just go and share and say everything's wonderful, because it wasn't. There was a lot of times that we were going through some humongous surrenders, but we went through them as a family. We always had family support. When I went through periods of physical problems, well, I had family support in that area. When I went through financial problems, the financial problems is the hardest part, because I went in and had a family meeting and said, Big Daddy's not going to be walking around with $5,000, $10,000 cash in his pocket anymore. And they all said, great, great, Dad, you know, you're going to get legit. And a week later, they all wanted money. I said, don't you remember that little conversation we had when I said I wasn't going to be carrying all that money around no more, that I was going legit? And they said, oh yeah, well, that was just what you said. Today I need $600 for my insurance on my Porsche. And I said, well, you're going to have to go work.
Because it took a while for, even though the ego has to be smashed, it takes a while for the attitude and the mental to catch up with the smashed ego. And so it was like, your actions speak so loud I can't hear a word you said, because there'd still be bragging but on both parts of things that we had.
We had to be very careful not to get with people in the program. We found ourselves a number of times aligning ourselves with people that we shouldn't be aligning ourselves with. I'm not putting them down. I'm just saying it was us doing that. We found ourselves aligning ourselves with people in speaking and what you say, you know, trying to people please or entertain. We found ourselves aligning ourselves financially with people that we had no business being involved with or trying to keep up with financially. we found ourselves that we had to work, and I worked for the, I was a union member. I was a union member for over 40 years, and I had an hourly person, and I had to be at work. I had to show up at work, and Sue worked, and Simone worked, and Simone had a career that we had to support. She wanted to be a model, and that's like trying to be a movie star, and you get a lot of rejection. And so we had to work and apply this tradition on ourselves to be what God wanted us to be, to be what God wanted us to be, and to support our family unit. And when Simone was trying to be a model, she had a lot of rejection, and she couldn't get 100% of her support from Alateen. She had to have some support from Mom and Dad, and I'm grateful we were able to do that, because she was able to fulfill that dream and became a very successful model. And that tradition 11 helped us align ourselves in the proper place for God's will to work in our life, because the results are now, later, you can look back on those things. And that's, you want to do tradition 11?
Okay. Our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need to always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, TV, and films. We need guard with special care the anonymity of all AA members. First of all, it's an attraction. And if I want people to change, like my sponsor told me one time, I was complaining that Keith never gave me any compliments, that I always had to ask, how do I look, and all that kind of stuff. She said, when's the last time you gave him one? Yeah. And the same way thing with Simone. And so I called her one day, I said, I know I've given him at least 100 compliments, and I haven't gotten one yet. She said, you didn't get well over sick overnight, you're not going to get well overnight. And it's going to take, it takes a long time for us to live down our actions and our attitudes. And I had to learn that I was really a trash mouth, and I was really negative in my home all the time. And it took a long time of me practicing good thoughts and good comments and that kind of thing with the other people in our home before I ever was recognized for being a good person in our home. Yeah, for not being the old person that I used to be.
Our daughter wanted to be a model, and so I'd go look in her room, and she had clothes thrown everywhere in that room. And I said, "You want to be a model and come out on a stage and wear a beautiful dress and all that stuff? Look at your room. Look at the clothes in your room." My sponsor says, "Quit looking in her room," you know. And then she said, "Well, you know that models throw their clothes down. It's somebody else's job to pick it up." They don't have to pick it up.
You
know, they just have to look good on the ramp, you know.
You know what fixed her, though, is that my sponsor had been over there at our house quite a few times, and we'd go up in the family room, which was right across from Simone's bedroom, and she'd see Simone in there with the room and being messy and trying to fix it up and stuff. And she came over there one time, and we was going into the family room, and Simone saw her, you know, looking in her room again and felt embarrassed herself. And she goes, well, the clothes on the bed are clean clothes. She's telling my sponsor. And my sponsor said, oh, great, Simone. I'm glad you've grown enough that you're starting to sleep with the clean clothes now. Yeah. And she heard that. She heard that from a sponsor.
The 11th step in the prayer and meditation, and then that 11th tradition, as our daughter made the transition from a little girl to a woman, and she was a very beautiful woman, very mature at an early age. There had to be some changes in our house. I couldn't sit around there and watch her. She couldn't run around the house without clothes on. When she brought some of her girlfriends over there to run around them little thongs, while me and the AA guys couldn't lay around over there and watch them, we had to hit the road, baby, when they hit the house. We got out of there. We had to have some privacy, and I had to respect the fact that she was maturing and becoming a full woman, and treat her as such. She couldn't come in there, and when I was laying on the couch, and jump on top of me and act like she was a little 9-year-old girl anymore. She was a mature woman, and we didn't play those games. And I had to pray a lot for God to help me look where I was supposed to look. One of the things that helped me there is that I was going into a woman's prison, and the women in that prison had all kinds of games, and I had to act properly when I went into that woman's prison and look in the proper places and what have you. And I'd trained myself by going into the woman's prison, and it helped me discipline, the discipline that was had to be done in our house when our daughter made that transition. And I would have to talk to Sue about things that she needed to talk to Simone about. I couldn't go directly to the child because I would revert back to my anger or be the disciplinarian. I had to have help. And I'm grateful that Sue helped me with that.
Okay, tradition 12. Anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all of our traditions, ever reminding us to place principles above personalities. The primary purpose of this tradition is a principle, it's a code of conduct. Principles are more important than individuals are. Principles are revealed through personalities. And one thing that I like, and these are just comments that I've written down in my book over the time that long-timers have given me. One of the ones that I really love is principles never change, personalities always do. You know, people fail us, principles never do. What I had to learn in this for myself with, you know, when Keith and I got in a disagreement or we didn't agree on something, the old tapes would start in my head and I was judging Keith by what he used to act like rather than giving him credit that he had a program. Same thing with Simone. And so I had to learn to just shut up and see when we had a confrontation of what their side of the deal was and what they were proposing. And for a man that I was told, that I told a sponsor he was never right before, you know, has grown with Alcoholics Anonymous to the point that this man is a real wise and attraction to me today.
When I was sober a short amount of time, while Sue and Simone and I were involved in service, and we were doing a committee thing to put on these kind of things. These people on the committee have had to have meetings and get-togethers and what have you. And I was the chairman of that thing, so my job was to clean up when everybody left. And I was had a newcomer with me, and my daughter was with me. She was the Alateen chairman. And I found there was a guy in our entertainment committee from Hollywood, and I found his organizer. A purse, really. And anyway, I opened it up, and there was money in there, and I didn't take the money because the newcomer's watching me over here, and my daughter's watching me over there. And so I found out whose it was, and I called him up, and I took it back and gave it back to him. My daughter went with me, and the newcomer went with me to be sure that I gave his purse back to him and his credit cards and his checkbook and all his stuff. And I gave that back to that guy, and he said, if there's ever anything I can do for you, why, let me know. And I remember arrogantly standing there thinking, you'll never be able to do anything for me. But 4 years later, when my daughter's in Italy to become a model or to work on her career there, that guy was there, and he literally saved our daughter's life by taking her and showing her the ropes and giving her some pointers. And he literally enhanced her career, and she has touched thousands of AA lives and thousands of Al-Anons and started Alateen and touched many, many kids' lives over there. And, you know, I look back on that, and if there's any, there's places in my life where I did something right. I may have had somebody watching me, but any kind of a spiritual change that I've had, it's been because I had an opportunity to do something wrong. And I had an opportunity to do something right. And with people watching me, I did the right thing. The next right thing. And that's what I tell people that I sponsor. Try to do the next right thing. And when I gave that guy his stuff back that time, my daughter was watching me and so was a newcomer. And they saw a change in me because the old me would have taken that guy's money without even batting an eye. If you can't take care of your stuff, well, then you don't deserve to have it, was my philosophy. And when I gave that stuff back to that guy, and it made full circle, and he was able to help my daughter and also help Alcoholics Anonymous as a whole and Al-Anon as a whole, there was a spiritual change as a result of these steps and as a result of these traditions. It not only affected AA as a whole, but it affected my daughter and enhanced her career. It could have even saved her life because she was sick and holed up in a room over there when that young man repaid that debt. And he carried that debt for 4 years after I gave him his billfold back. He stayed sober, and when my daughter saw him over there, he remembered that debt and repaid it. He did something for me Then he came home a week later and told us that our daughter was fine and where she was. And so I believe that the spiritual change that we endure here is through a process by applying these principles in our lives.
On this, one thing that I found out about is when you're right, you don't have to defend it, and when you're wrong, you can't. You know, and it's a spiritual foundation that I've been given from the very beginning. It's respect that I've been taught, and I had none when I got here. It's going on blind faith one more time. It goes right back to obedience to the unenforceable. And there is, people have feet of clay. Everybody's a human being. And the thing that I don't try not to do today is judge people today on program experiences from the past. Don't judge me on my past based on my program back then. I've grown, and I know you have too. It's the principle of this program that we're all here today. We're all trying to grow, and we're going to be getting a lot of input from a lot of neat speakers this weekend. And, you know, our ears are going to be open, I hope, and we're going to hear the things that we need to hear, because God uses people to help other people, and that's what these traditions has taught us to do with our lives today. Thank you very much for asking us to do this.